Welcome to episode 16 of the Reading Coves podcast. If you're a book lover who may be interested in joining our online book club, please visit our website at thereadingcove.com. For April 2012, we're discussing Whiskey Island by Emily Richards. Hi, I'm Millennia from Florida.
I'm Roberta from the Atlanta area.
And today we are discussing Whiskey Island by Emily Richards. And we're pretty much wrapping up the discussion in the group, our online discussion. And the overall opinion of The Cove, it was a B, enjoyable story. Everybody really enjoyed it very much. And Roberta, why don't you tell us what you loved most about it? Because I know you liked it.
I did like it, and I think I agreed with you and some of the others that it was a good story, but I especially liked the historical parts of the story, since the story went back and forth, it wove back and forth in time fairly seamlessly, and I enjoyed the historical part that told a little bit of background of how the people in this area came to be there, and what had shaped their lives and shaped their history, that and especially the story of the Irish immigrants and all they'd had to face, why they came to this area.
Yeah, as we were saying, we hadn't. I hadn't known that Cleveland had such a Irish history. You know, immigration back then. I didn't know about that, so that, was interesting.
Yeah, that was news to me because, as someone else had said in The Cove, that a lot of times you think of more of Boston and New York and places like that where the immigrants landed and stayed right there. So it was interesting that so many people had settled there. But it made sense. It was, they had a good support group there, and they'd all sort of suffered through the same backgrounds in Ireland, where they'd had to leave because basically it was a starvation.
Yeah.
And with the potato famines and everything. So I especially enjoyed how the people had come to be there and how strong they were and how tough they were to overcome the obstacles, because even after they made it to America and to as far as Cleveland, there were still a lot of things to have to deal with, that life wasn't easy. They really had to work hard to make a good life for themselves and overcome a lot of tragedies.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it's told in two different settings. You know, you have the historical setting, the 19th century Cleveland area, Whiskey Island, and then you have the modern day. And I mean, there was a lot more of the modern day story, and I was just so entranced by the 19th century story. And when it opened, you know, talking about Terence and his brother who had first migrated to Cleveland and was, you know, had bought this house and was working and sending money back home. And then, you know, he died by some tragedy. I was just so engaged with that. And I just wanted more of that. So when it would flip back to the modern story, I felt like, hurry up and get back to the historical part.
Yeah, tell me more about what happened to these poor people, how they managed their lives.
Exactly. And with Lena and Rowan, it was just, I love that section, about those portions of the books the most.
Right, right. As I think you had said, some others had said that it could have really been a book in itself. Just the historical side of that. And then maybe a book later on. But it still worked well, the way the author blended the two parts together to show how the modern-day people, they were definitely descendants of these people, and they had their own issues and traumas to deal with themselves.
It was seamless. It was done well.
And I like the other people's story. You had to admire Megan, because she had basically had to raise her two younger sisters, and I guess maybe she got some of her toughness from Lena and that side of the family, where you just knew that, oh yes, well, life is awful, but I can't just let things hold me back. I have to do what I have to do to help my family to survive, and it can't just be all about me. I have to make the sacrifice and the effort to keep things together.
Absolutely. And I was saying, I really don't feel like Megan gave up anything. Like some members were saying, you know, or I think it was a discussion question that asked about her sacrificing and what she had to do when her father went off. And I feel like that's just what she was, it felt like that's what she was born to do. Like, what else was she going to do, even if he were still there? I don't really see her life being all that different.
No, no, she was, you know, definitely the typical oldest child where right. a lot was expected of her, and she just had certain expectations of herself that she had to be the leader and do that. But yes, even if her father had been there, she would have had to just take up the reins because he wasn't capable. He just wasn't capable of taking care of things.
Exactly.
Even if he hadn't walked off, he just had too many issues of his own to really deal with young daughters and all, and life in general.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's Casey, who wasn't one of my favorite characters. I thought she was so whiny and self-absorbed. And I really, even though Megan got on my nerves a little bit too, I really thought Casey was very unfair to Megan. You know, I thought, you know, she was really selfish. She was just so self-centered. Even though she was doing such a selfless thing, by looking after the baby, the little girl, I never got a sense, you know, I was saying during the discussion, I never really felt her to be a selfless person. She
right.
just seemed very self-absorbed to me.
Right.
And her relationship with John, I wasn't all that interested in it. It just felt so high school-y. And I guess because they were high school sweethearts and, you know, she was, I don't know, I just wasn't as interested in it.
No, I said, and like I said, yeah, I think you're right that Casey just didn't appreciate everything Megan had done for her. She didn't realize
right.
how she wouldn't have been where she was in her life.
Exactly.
If it hadn't been for Megan, she probably would have been like a high school dropout and had to work herself.
Exactly. She would have had to have really made sacrifices.
Right.
Yeah, and I think she did come to appreciate it eventually. You know,
right.
she did come around, but she went through much of the book just being really annoying.
Well, yeah,
to me, anyway,
a little over dramatic, right?
Yes,
she. And then I think you said like with Peggy, we don't really know as much about her. Maybe there'll be more about her in the sequel. You don't know that much about her she's not as fully developed as the others.
Right. She felt more to me like a tag-on character. It was like, you know, now that we know that the sequel focuses on her going over to Ireland and stuff, then it's like, okay, you know, so, but I would have loved if the sequel, like I was saying, I would have loved it if it was going to be telling us about Lena and Rowan's life after
right.
they fled Cleveland, you know? Because I think that would have made a dynamite story.
Yeah, that would have been a good sequel too, because that would have been a story. But maybe one of these days, Emily or Richards will write that if enough people ask for it. Sometimes authors, if they see there's enough people that really love their
yeah.
storyline, that they say, oh, well, that is another way to take it off, you know, later on down the road.
Yeah, I would appeal to her to write Lena and Terrence's story.
Yeah, that what happened that after they had to deal with all those different things.
Yeah, and they ran off. Well, she went ahead, and then Rowan went later.
Right, right.
And then with Father McSweeney, and I mean, I think that would be so interesting. And we would probably get more information as to how, what was the father's name?
Rooney.
How yeah. Rooney got the journal, Father McSweeney's second journal or whatever.
Right.
That I don't think that was really clearly shown that like how we, you know, we're just to assume that it was handed down, you know, for posterity or
yeah,
so that the truth would be preserved. But, you know,
but
it's unclear. But,
yeah,
exactly.
Because he kept saying, well, they've dug it up now. And with, you know, even his crazy knew they dug up this
yeah.
these secrets and it was going to come out. These things he was supposed to be pledged to keep a secret,
keep it, yeah.
Of this past murder, not that it mattered by this late date, but he got in his head, I guess, from his ancestors. You know, this is a family secret. You need to hold on to it, but you can't be letting everybody know. That was the feeling you got,
right? And it also was the big question mark as to who Lena's baby's father was.
Right, right.
You know, was it? You know, are they descendants of James Simeon? Are they? Because we know that one baby was Terrence's, might have been Terrence's child. It wasn't Rowan, so they weren't
right.
Donahue's. That child wasn't a Donahue.
Right.
So that's interesting. And, you know, it's a good thing because you're left wanting more. It was a rich story. I really enjoyed the sweep, you know, and the history and the setting. It was all very well written.
But, yeah, that's the good thing. Yeah, you don't want to feel like you've gotten to the end of a longer book like this and think, oh, gosh, good grief, I'm glad I'm finished. But this is like, oh, this was good. You know, and it read fairly quickly for a long book. And
yeah.
You could, and then at the same time, you still had questions, which is a good thing, because sometimes you don't want it so richly detailed that you know everything and more than you ever needed to know.
Right. But this too much information, yeah.
Too much information, exactly. But this really gave you enough to give you a richly detailed story, but at the same time, you had questions, and it made you stop and think about different issues. Like, made you think about Rooney's mental illness.
Yeah.
You know, what could have triggered it, or was it just always there?
Yeah, and I know Miriam was saying that she... Was it Miriam who was saying that she wondered why Megan and the rest didn't do more to try to find him?
Right.
Know? And some others were saying that. And I just kind of felt like Megan, you know, being the oldest, and they were so young too when he ran
off.
But her being the oldest and stepping up to the plate and taking over the Whiskey Island Saloon, she was very, very hurt and angry with him for doing it. And I think, you know, the personality she was, it was like, I'm not going to run after looking for you. You know, and all she did was turn the light on, you know, put the lamp on for him.
Right. Because you know, hoping against hope that he'd come, you know.
That things would fall back into place and everything would be all right. He'd come back and, you know, the nightmare kind of would be over.
Yeah, well, as you said, she was so young. I don't think she really realized his abandonment was truly part of a mental illness. I think she just thought that he couldn't cope.
He
was a drunk, and he just couldn't cope with the responsibility. He was self-centered, only thought about himself. I don't think she realized how seriously ill he really was.
Yeah.
But and he didn't realize it until later when he did come back again.
Right.
With her being an adult and being able to see what was going on, and I mean, anybody could tell what was going on, the way he was talking and acting, that he was, you know, seriously mentally ill. But when they were younger, I don't think they realized. I think they just thought, well, he couldn't hack in, and so he just took off rather than having to deal with us.
Yeah.
But it was sad. But I mean, it really made a big difference in their life. It made them stronger, but then maybe at the same time, maybe that's part of why Casey was the way she was too, because she really hadn't had a true true parents.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. And they all had very distinct personalities and a very distinct reaction, I guess, to, you know, their father's abandonment and their mom passing away and their,
right,
you know, being kind of having to take care of themselves.
Right. So, and then they said, like, Peggy's tacked on, but with her, she'd had to be farmed out, unfortunately. So she was sort of disconnected from the rest of them until she did get older and found out more about her background since she was just a little baby when all this happened.
Yeah, and, you know, Lynette was mentioning that the couple that helped look after her, it was really, you know, sweet that they didn't try to get legal custody of her and, you know, take Megan out of her life.
Well, and they could have, too.
And they could have, yes. So that was good. Because I, like I was saying in the group, I think that would have been the one thing that might have broken Megan.
Right. She'd lost her sister, because she's as much as possible trying to keep her family together as best she could.
Absolutely. And the one thing I have to say about Casey, I did really, really feel for her when she was telling John about what happened with the little boy that she granted visitation with the father.
Uh-huh.
Why she left social work. I mean, I can't imagine being in that situation. And I really felt her pain there.
Right. Because unfortunately, things like that do happen. You pick up the newspaper or turn on the news, and those things do happen. These social workers do have huge caseloads. And,
yeah.
And sometimes the laws are more on the side of keeping the children with the parents and are granting them visitations, and you don't ever know if these people are going to go, you know, crazy and do crazy things.
Yeah. And I was saying, I didn't know about that underground protection system. And Lori was enlightening us a bit about it and saying it was really big in the 80s and 90s because there really wasn't a lot of hope for taking children away from, especially if the parents are wealthy.
Right, right.
So the abuse would just, you know, continue.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact case, but it seemed like there was a big prominent case, as she said, more back in the 90s with some of these underground protection networks, and there'd be like big controversies and things going on, and people even willing to go to jail rather than to give the child back just to protect the child, which is a shame that people have to go to that extreme, but I could see how it could happen, because as you say, you see bad stuff all the time in the news that happens with these children.
Yeah, and the law is imperfect. So
No.
Things like that do happen where, you know, you find yourself trying to do the right thing, but you're at odds with the legal system.
Right, right. You may know what's right or what you feel in your gut, but you're still up against the letter of the law, and sometimes those two don't agree, so it's tough. And then, unfortunately, the child or sometimes the abused wife or whatever is the one that gets caught in the middle of all this to suffer.
And then I want to say a bit about Niccolo.
Oh, yes.
I liked him. I felt really, you know, I felt for him when he was telling Megan about what happened with the homeless man, Billy.
Right.
And I could see how that sent him running. But I felt like there might have been some indifference or some ambivalence within him before about being a priest. Because he didn't seem to fit the mold of a priest, even though he still lived by a lot of the virtues and valued the virtues of priesthood. But he didn't seem to fit for me. So I can understand why he left and why the incident with the homeless man was like the straw that broke the camel's back.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, as you said, he seemed like a very good-hearted, good person.
Yeah.
He had all the caring, charitable attributes you think of as going someone who was really involved in the church, but there wasn't that true calling. You couldn't feel that he had that true calling to the priesthood that people have to have.
Right.
But, and I said, so he probably sort of waffling whether he admitted to himself about whether to stay in the priesthood or not, and then this horrible tragic death was the final straw. I thought, no, I just don't have this in me, and I'm, you know, not happy the way this was handled. I could have done it differently, or could have been done differently. So,
right.
And maybe he felt like he could do more to help people, and he ended up helping, you know, people once, even more so after he left the priesthood, especially with those young boys.
Yeah.
That he was able to do a little bit more outreach and helping those in need. But yeah, he just didn't, as you said, he didn't fit the mold of what you think of as a priest, even for a younger one. So that probably it was a wise choice for him to move on and use his talents and gifts in another direction.
In another way, yeah. And that's exactly what happened. So what scenes do you remember the most?
Well, I said the ones that people I said online, unfortunately, the ones where terrible things happen. You know, isn't that terrible? But that's how it is in life. Sometimes you can remember these bad things more than good things, and as the years progress.
Yeah.
But I said unfortunately, like when the horrible accident with Terrence, when he got, you know, hurt.
Yep.
And but at the same time, then when the doctor and Father McSweeney came to confront him.
Yes.
Because granted, yes, he was disabled for life, but he was really down.
Wallowing,
just wallowing in his disability and self-pity.
Yeah.
And that wasn't doing anybody any good. Because here, poor Lena was working her fingers to the bone, literally making these sacrifices.
Yeah.
And granted, he was never going to be what he was before, be able to do it, but he just wasn't even appreciative of her. But it can happen like that. People who get really ill or really hurt, not everybody can be all noble and smiling about it. Unfortunately, it's real easy to kind of get down there in the dumps. So.
Yeah, and I thought that was really well done. I mean,
right.
the dynamic between them, because Lena did begin to get annoyed with him.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, because he was just, you know, it's like to a certain point you can commiserate with a person and you can definitely understand. But after a while, it's like, okay, you know, sometimes we need to start accepting things and trying to make the best of things.
Right. Yeah, you've gone through the different stages. If you've gone through the anger and stuff long enough, you need to get into acceptance.
Exactly.
To move on. Yes, this is probably the best you're going to be, but you need to accept it if we're going to be able to work with each other and help each other out. Yeah,
and
so
that's exactly what Father McSweeney really hammered home to him and told him, you know, you're useless to her now. I love that. I mean, it was so real and so raw.
Right, and that's what people say, and that's what he needed to hear. He had to hear it from somebody like that, a man he respected.
He
couldn't have heard it from Lena, or he just would have been more upset and brushed it
more
off.
More embarrassed.
Yeah, embarrassed, but to hear it from someone who he thought so much of, that's what he needed to kind of pull him back out of that deep, dark hole he was in. So that was a pretty powerful scene, I thought.
It was. It's one of the scenes I remember most. I don't remember if I mentioned it in the group. And because, Terrence was saying how he could smell himself because he wasn't, you know, bathing, he wasn't taking care of himself, and they showed up unexpected, and here he is smelling not so great. And I could just picture it. It was really, really well done.
And that's a true sign of depression, because people get so they just don't take care of themselves because they don't care. They've just kind of lost touch with everyday life, and they don't want to try to cope. They just want to be miserable and hide in themselves. So it was good that he could come out of that. It's terrible things did, you know, there wasn't a happy ending there, but unfortunately, that's life too. That was rang pretty true to life, because things can happen. There's some really good people, and then there's some really evil people like James Simeon that'll.
Yes, good segue to him, because I mean he was awful. I mean to basically be targeting or to select Lena to have his baby, and then pretend that his wife is pregnant and send her off to England, and then I was just like, this man is unbelievable.
Well, he was mentally ill too, but in his own way. His,
yes.
You know, like this, I don't know what you call it, megalomania or something. He was crazy. Maybe it was handed down. Maybe Rooney's mental illness was due from that line. Who knows?
I wouldn't be surprised because he was nuts. He was like, thinking that he could just do anything.
He was just power mad. That's for sure. And unfortunately, people that are wealthy, you know, some of them can be very noble and have a lot of philanthropic charities or help other people. But some of them, they just get so wrapped up in it. It's all about money and power and what they want.
And poor Lena, I mean, I really, really felt for her, because that was a horrible situation.
Right.
And when Father McSweeney finally came to her rescue, I was like exhaling. I was like, I felt such relief for her. Like, wow.
Because she was really caught in the middle. It was a horrible thing. You think, well, how could someone do that? Well, sometimes they don't have any choices. As I said in our online discussion, that unfortunately throughout history that men have held terrible threats over women's head to... make them grant them their wishes, whether it's to have a baby or just sexual favors in general.
Right.
That it happened all the time, because there is a book other one we read, The Kitchen House. You know that the slave owners would take advantage of women, and some of these other books they have stories of the women didn't have much choice. It was either that or you'd be killed, or somebody in your family be killed or sold off. So it was just horrible, excruciating choices to make, because you felt you were in the clutches of these evil people, and they were.
Yeah, they sure were. And the other scene that I really remember is when Lena was in the kitchen at the Simeon house, and she was begging that other servant girl to stay with her. I forget her name.
Yeah, start with the T. I can't remember either, but yeah.
Yeah, or I think it was like Nona or something.
She
was begging her to stay, you know, so that, because she knew what was coming.
Right.
And I just, oh my gosh, that scene really came to life.
Right. Well, and then the other woman didn't want to believe it, because that's the thing. People don't want to believe these horrible things
about. I was kind of feeling like she might have been jealous, because she was saying, oh, he's never made advances toward me.
Well, that's because she didn't have the, you know,
the red hair or whatever.
The red hair or the qualities he needed to make this baby his heir.
Yeah, so. But it was kind of, you know, when it was unfolding, I was kind of wondering, oh, is she going to let her down because she's jealous?
Right.
You know, is she not going to protect her because she feels jealous? Like, well, I've been here before you and he hasn't made advances toward me. But
right.
No, it ended up not being that at all.
No, I mean, yeah. I think she's kind of denial. Like a lot of times you see cases of abuse that people try to report it sometimes and people don't believe it because they think, oh, well, that couldn't happen.
Exactly.
You know, that can't be right, but it is. It does happen, and it is right, so.
Yeah, because then she ended up being very helpful with Rowan when he came and asked her what was going on.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So they kind of made things right eventually after that she truly thought, well, okay, you know, Lena was right, and I wasn't believing her, but she was right.
Yeah. And the other memorable scene, so we can wrap up, is
sure.
when Lena was giving birth to the baby.
Oh, yeah.
All by herself.
I know.
I was like, oh, my God. Is she really going to have this baby without any help?
Yeah, so that's unbelievable. But sometimes it happens that, unfortunately, that they may be fictional stories, but unfortunately things like that happen that you think, well, I sure couldn't do it, but they're tougher women than some of us. They just had to do what they had to do in the past.
Yeah. And when Terrence took Lena for the buggy ride that Sunday, that was really nice.
Yes. Yeah, that was
so excited.
That was one of the sweeter scenes. Yes, that was very uplifting, sweet.
They were working so hard. You know, she was
right.
Cooking and carting all that stuff down to the docks. And, you know, they were really looking forward to that. And it's his one day off, so he wasn't really all that keen on doing it. But
but he did it just to make her happy. And
yes.
It did. It was its own reward.
That was so sweet. And I wanted to know if she grew to love Rowan. I guess that's why I wanted more of their story, because it's
right.
Like, did she grow to love him, or was Terrence like it, her one true love?
Right. Well, I mean, I don't think she would probably have ever loved Rowan as much as she did Terrence.
Right.
But I think he was such a good person that she could have at least grown to love him, and the fact of respecting him and he had helped her so much and really been her savior in so many ways. So, I mean, I think he'd always loved her from afar. He just knew he couldn't have her with her being married to Terrence. But
yeah.
I would think that, yeah, if they'd told more about their story, she would have come to trust him and love him, and maybe it's not a passionate way, but still.
Yeah.
In a respectful way. I'm glad that this was a pick. I really enjoyed this book and enjoyed the whole sweeping story of it.
Yeah.
As we said, the historical was my favorite part, but I enjoyed the whole story. I thought it was very well written, and I'm going to look for, I haven't gotten to it yet, but I'm going to look for the sequel to it, because I'd like to know a little bit more about the other characters, and maybe we can someday write Miss Richards a little note and said, oh, have you ever thought about...
Exactly.
Writing the further adventures of Lena and Roland, because we'd sure buy that. So, but it was a good pick. It was well.
Yeah, and it was. I forgot to say that at the beginning, but it's our 137th pick, and it was chosen by yours truly.
Yes, very good choice. I said, well, and you don't always know going into these things that it looks like it'll be good, and sometimes they let you down, and sometimes they live up to their promise. So it was a good.
Sometimes you're surprised, you know. That
right.
How good it is. Yeah.
Right. So it lived up to its promise. That's for sure. And
yeah. And a few of us are gonna do buddy reads on the sequel, the parting glass.
Uh huh.
Lynette, I already have it in my pile to be read. So I will definitely be checking it out.
Okay.
With a few
that
other
sounds
members
good.
Of the group. Yeah. So that's our take on Whiskey Island, and we'd also like to thank Emily Richards for answering some interview questions for us. Her answers really did enrich our experience of Whiskey Island. And thank you, listeners, for listening in. Please leave us your comments, as always, and let us know if you've read this book or if you're fans of Emily Richards. Be sure to come back and tune in next month. We'll be discussing Whistling in the Dark by Leslie Kagan. See you next month. Bye.
Bye.